This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Okay, well, I have a really great book today. As a matter of fact, I think it's going to be my pick for number one summer read, unless something else comes along. And I do have some great books coming along. Karen Slaughter is going to be here next Thursday. And, you know, she's a pretty great writer. But I am telling you, this book so impresses me. It is just, I'm so excited to talk to this author because I love this book. And the name of the book is Fast Girls, and it is written by Elise Hooper. And hi, Elise, are you there?
Hi. Yes, I am. How are you?
Okay. Well, I was just telling my listeners that I am picking this as my number one summer read. Maybe something else will come along and I'll knock you down to two. But I doubt it. I really, really doubt it.
Wow. Thank you. I'm so honored. Thank you.
This, but I'll send you a certificate. I'm going to do that.
Perfect.
Because I love this book. But I made a serious mistake. And I reread. No, because I read it a while back when I first got it. That's one of the joys of having a radio program, is that I get to read all the books before anybody else. But I made a mistake of rereading chapter 4 this morning, which is my favorite chapter. And so there I am crying my eyes because I think chapter 4 is so great. It is one of the best chapters, and they should actually, in all of these writing classes in universities, they have to take your chapter 4 as an example of a perfect chapter. It is.
Wow,
it builds,
thank you.
It builds emotion. It sets us it sets the place. So it's so clear. We see it so clearly. We are in the place and we are there. And I just love it. And I read it again. I read it once and I started crying. I thought, oh, this is ridiculous. I can't start crying before I'm going to do my read. And then I said, no, I have to read it again because is it as perfect as I think? And it is. And so I'm telling all of my listeners out there, if you are writing and, you know, unless you are already so high up that you can't learn anything, but anyone else out there, if you're writing, you should get this book just to read chapter 4. Because it's an example of how you grab a reader and just sort of just after that chapter, you can't stop reading.
Thank you.
It's beautiful. And I wanted to say one thing. I don't want any spoilers. I don't want you. I had the joy of having Sonia Richards Ross on the program a few years ago. And as you know, of course, she won the 400 meter at the 2012 Olympics. And she wrote a wonderful book called Run With Me. And so I did a lot of research into runners at the time. And so I knew a lot of the stories. And I knew basically, you know, who was going to come out winners, because you really focus on three runners. But it's really, for anybody else, it's a mystery story. I mean, it's as exciting as any suspense or mystery story you can read all summer.
Oh, yay. Thank you.
So I'll let you tell about it, but I don't want you to tell who's going to win, who's going to lose, who's going to fall, who's going to...
Sure.
Because I think that's part of the joy. I love the reveal. In a novel, I love the reveal. I always love an author who can do a great reveal.
Thank you. Okay.
Baldacci's great at reveals. You know, there's layers to it. And then when you come to it, you say, oh, wow, this is so good. This is so good. And that's going to happen with anybody who reads this book. Because Fast Girls is, well, of course, one reason I want to tell people why they have to read this book now is that soon it's going to be a major motion picture. And I know that, you know, I know that there hasn't been anything as good as this since Hidden Figures came out. So I know that's going to be a feature film. So it's always great to read the book first. Okay. So now that I've complimented you like crazy, I'm going to let you tell us about it, because it's just such a fun read. Everything, from everything to, you know, General MacArthur, you have to tell us about that. I mean, all the details. You must have had, as I'm reading it, I kept thinking, this girl has found the joy on paper. I mean, she knows joy. Aww. Because you're finding things, you discover things, you put in things that, just little things like whether they're eating a lot of ice cream. Or, you know, or bringing back champagne during Prohibition. So I'm going to let you tell about the three main characters and something about them, but you're not to tell who wins, who loses, or anything like that, because I want people to have that excitement of the discovery, okay? So now it's your turn to talk.
Thank you. Well, first of all, I should call in every morning because I'm ready to start writing again. You really fired me up. Thank you. This is a book that definitely should communicate joy in a lot of ways. Of course, some heartbreak too, but I came. So this is a story about three trailblazing women track stars of the 1920s and 30s who will all come together to race in Hitler's 1936 Olympics in Berlin. And, you know, there is not a whole lot out there, especially in the fiction world and the novel world, about women athletes. And I have played sports my whole life, and it wasn't until my younger daughter was interested in, she had to pick a historic American to write do a biography project on for her library class. And she picked Gertrude Ederle. Now, Joy, I don't know if you caught this, Patsy, but did you catch who Gertrude Ederle is? It's kind of in the afterword of the book.
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
She was an Olympic swimmer. This is not a giveaway at all.
No, this
is
wonderful.
She was an Olympic swimmer. She wins three medals in the 1924 games in Paris. And then she goes on to, you know, for most of us, that would be enough, right? Three Olympic medals. But she decides she's going to become the first woman to swim the English Channel. And she does so in 1926. Took her two tries, and she came home really feted as a major celebrity, like Amelia Earhart or something, a ticker tape parade in Manhattan, the works. And yet, I had never heard of her, and it really got me thinking about other pioneering women athletes. And I really then just discovered this whole world of fascinating women. I mean, there is no shortage of people to write about. And the first woman I discovered who I just knew, and I think sometimes it's just a chemistry thing of how you know you're going to write about someone. Kind of like how you fall in love, right? You just kind of have that feeling where you're sort of obsessed with someone. And in the first one, it was Betty Robinson. And she was a young girl outside of Chicago who is running for the train one day after school, if you can believe it. And a teacher spots her and thinks she looks fast and encourages her to enter in some races. And within a handful of races, she finds herself in Amsterdam in 1928, on the starting line of the 100-meter dash, I think they called it at the time. And so and this happens in the first few pages. So I'm going to give a little bit of a win away here, but she ends up winning that medal. She wins a gold. It's a real upset. Again, I think this was her fourth or fifth race she had ever done. It was a quick trip to the Olympics in 1928 for women. And I should also add that 1928 is the first year women are invited to compete in track and field in the Olympics. Up until this point, women were sort of invited to only really compete in what they considered aesthetically pleasing events. and this was anything from like sailing and tennis and archery and fencing. Eventually swimming and diving becomes added because I guess men just wanted to see women in bathing suits. Really, that was the reason, not because they really respected women swimmers. So Betty comes along, and she is also then becomes this huge American celebrity in 1928 for this unexpected win. And then my second athlete, because the story follows three, as I said, the second one is Louise Stokes, and she is a black girl in Malden, Massachusetts, which is a small town outside of Boston. And she also becomes kind of spotted by by some friends as a fast runner, and she is invited to join her local track club. And she, over a couple of years, rises through the ranks of New England's track and field scene, racing and winning. And she will qualify for the 1932 game. And then we at last have Helen Stevens, who is known as the Fulton Flash. She was a farm girl out of Missouri. And so all three of these women are really different, because Helen was a real outcast in her community. She was a real tomboy. She eventually is 6 feet tall, size 12 feet, birthmark over her eye, husky voice. No one really knew what to do with this girl who wasn't interested in thinking about the house she would have someday and who she was going to marry. She was interested in things that typically interested boys. And her family really didn't support her endeavors in running, but she was just this phenomenal athlete. And so she will find herself qualifying for the 1936 game. So all three of these women, kind of against many obstacles, sexism, obviously, racism, especially in the case of Louise, these women will all come together to race in this in these Olympics in Berlin that, you know, up till now, I think most people know through stories mostly about men, like The Boys in the Boat, which is an amazing story, or Unbroken about Louise Zamperini. Or they maybe know about Jesse Owens, who was a phenomenal black athlete who won 4 gold medals in Berlin in 1936. But so little is known about these women, and they just had such extraordinary journeys of getting to the Olympics, and then, of course, what happens in Berlin. I mean, Berlin is kind of this Olympics that fascinates everyone, because it really is such a tense setting of political intrigue and social drama. And so it really is kind of this amazing thing that we now, I mean, Hitler really shapes the modern Olympics into what we know today as the Olympics by creating such a slick kind of show for the world. Because up until 1936, the Olympics tended to be kind of slapdash events, to be honest. I mean, sometimes people didn't even really know the Olympics were happening in their city. So it's not what the spectacle we associate with the Olympics today. And, you know, when I started this novel, of course, I thought the book would be coming out the summer at the same time as the Tokyo Games.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
It was like perfect timing. You have a book about the Olympics coming out during the Olympics. Everybody's interested in the Olympics. And now all we are left with are reruns. I was watching a rerun of the opening of the Australian. I mean, this is how desperate you get. I'm watching a rerun of the Australian opening in the year 2000, and I had forgotten that they ever even had an Olympics, but I've been watching it because I want some Olympics.
I know. We all miss the Olympics. I know. Well, I will say, in Fast Girls, you get 3 Olympics in one book. You get 1928, 1932, and 1936, and all are very different games.
Oh, very.
Was in Amsterdam, and 32 was in Los Angeles, and it's kind of, it was really, I mean, I learned so much while you talked, I think, a little about my research, and I learned so much while working on this book, because of course I had to really understand these three women and the communities in which they grew up in and kind of their struggles and victories. But I also really had to learn so much about each of these Olympics. They're three really detailed, you know, really elaborate kind of settings, because all three are so different. And there were so many things I didn't realize. Like, I had no idea, for example, that the Berlin Olympics, there was such an active boycott movement leading up to it. And historians really have kind of wondered what if history could have been different if we hadn't ended up sending a team and kind of enabled Hitler to have this platform on which to demonstrate his power. So that's kind of an interesting question, too. So, I mean, I just became really obsessed with the Olympics and just all of these women Olympians, they're so fascinating. I mean, something that's come up since the book came out, actually, is that one of the secondary characters in my book has family who lives within walking distance of my house here in Seattle. And when I just recently walked down there and looked at all the memorabilia they have from her adventures in 1936, they have everything from the invitation to the party that the athletes all go to, this kind of what turns out to be a pretty creepy party held by some Nazi officials. They have Gertrude Wilhelmsen's personalized invitation, and they have a Nazi ring, apparently, she was given at some point. I mean, so much amazing stuff from this time period. Well, so that's been really kind of a fun little adventure to suddenly make this connection with a local family.
Well, and all of this comes through your research has been so exquisite, really. You've gone into lovely little details that make the periods come alive, those years come alive, the cities come alive, and all the characters around it. It's just so well done. How many years did you work on this?
I worked on it for 3 years, which, to be honest, isn't really all that long. But it was intense because I really wanted this book to come out at the same time as the Olympics.
Exactly.
So I was promoting, my last book. I mean, I remember I was touring around in the winter of 2019 to talk about Learning to See, and I would spend all day in my hotel rooms working furiously at Fast Girls and then going out in the evenings to do these book events. But normally I would never work quite that intensely, writing so much while I was promoting a new one. Well, but I really wanted to hit this deadline, and now, of course, 2020 has
And of course, you're not touring around promoting this book like we had certainly had hoped for so many books. And it's so awful, really. All of the conventions, all of the book fairs, all of the book shows, all of the book signings that have been canceled. It just drives me crazy. And that's why I'm so thrilled that I can help promote, authors and the books that I love. And this one I just love. And I hope that we're going to continue talking about this. I hope you can stay longer so we can talk about your other books. But
sure.
Oh, good. Then I'm just going to keep you. I'm not going to let you. I don't want to let you go. As I said, when I read the book the first time through, I was just thrilled. I was just, it took my breath away, really. And then when I reread parts of it yesterday and then today when I reread chapter 4, because that chapter is about Louise Stokes, the black girl. And I'm telling you, the way you set it out, because I come from a small town, I just mentioned that there's a railroad involved. We did used to run on the railroad. So there was something, it just touched a part of me. Oh. And then I read it again and I said, she has laid out in one chapter, she has just created the story that is so strong. And that's why I want all writers to read this chapter, because I think it is, there are so many chapters in the book that are great. But this particular one, when you can take one person, one event, one moment in time, and create something that is so living and breathing. And of course, as I'm, I was a script writer. I used to write screenplays. And so I know that, it's so gorgeous. This is like a gift. Screenplay writer gets this thing and say, well, we're not touching this chapter. I mean, I don't care. this is perfect. It's like, just perfect. I get thrilled about it. But let's talk about the different, particularly I want to talk about the 28 Olympics, because it brings you into it. And once you're into this story, as you said, nobody really paid too much attention to the Olympics. They weren't as big a deal, certainly as we had hoped they would be today. But I found it so delightful the way you tell the story about the 28 Olympics. So let's talk about that one particularly, because I want about general, because guys can, and then I think the nice thing about this book, men will enjoy this. Any man who likes sports will like it, because you have about the guys involved in sports too. And then when they read about the general, it's some part of, they're used to all the military side, but they have never heard this. So tell us about this and how he got involved in the whole thing, what you discovered.
Yeah, well, this was really unexpected, because I'm actually working on a World War II book right now set in the Philippines.
Oh, my goodness.
So MacArthur plays quite a large role in my current book that I'm working on. So it is so funny that he crops up in this early one. But he, in fact, was, he led the athletes 1928 to Amsterdam. He was the chairman of the Olympic Committee for the U.S. As this sort of young general. I mean, he was major general, I believe, in 1928. But it is a funny, I mean, he pops up in the photos. He's so young looking, and it is kind of amazing. But yeah, these 1928 games, I mean, you know, when I talk about, so it's Betty, who's the athlete of the three main ones who goes to Amsterdam. And she's 16 at the time, and I've really been thinking a lot about that. But her parents put her, and I have these old photos of Betty's parents with her right when she comes home. She had just turned 17 upon arriving home. But, you know, to put a 16-year-old girl on this ship for, I think it was about a 10-day-long journey to Amsterdam. I mean, I have a 15-year-old daughter. I can't imagine doing that. I mean, this was probably, I'm not sure Betty had left Chicago, really, up until her Olympic adventures. And to suddenly kind of, the girls, of course, had chaperones. Male athletes, I don't think they had chaperones for, but the women certainly did. And so they packed them all onto this boat that ended up being sort of smaller than they expected because they had planned on a different ship, and yet it had some mechanical difficulties, maybe a fire, I think. And so these athletes are all sent off, and really there were sort of training facilities set up on the boat, and I go into that because, I mean, that was just amazing. They had this tiny little pool and a track set up, and you know, even
and we must mention Johnny Weissmuller was there. Of course, the original Tarzan. Well, to me, the only Tarzan. Like, I don't have to say. Right. I mean, there is nobody else who could compare to that.
Right. So I know some people. You know, a lot of these early Olympians go on to have film careers, especially the swimmers and the divers. And Johnny, of course, was right in there. And in fact, I think Johnny had been told to. He had told Betty's parents he'd keep an eye out for her. And so, because Betty was there were several very young women there, 15 and 6-year-old girls, and Betty was one of them, very young. And so, yeah, what's amazing is they all get to Amsterdam, and it was almost like the Dutch had sort of forgotten they were hosting. I mean, the pool was leaking, there were cows wandering around the track, and so suddenly there was this scramble of officials having to kind of set up all the facilities to make them competitive. But, you know, the U.S. athletes are told, oh, we don't have enough hotels. I guess you're going to stay aboard the ship. And swimmers, you can train in the canals. And, I mean, everyone was kind of horrified. I mean, actually, a lot of athletes got sick. I think there were everything from, like, pink eye to kind of various viruses traveling around all this close quarters on the ship. And it sounded maybe not like the Olympics you'd really want to go to. But nevertheless, Betty is able to prevail. And, you know, I also, MacArthur talked a really big game about how well the Americans were going to do in these Olympics. And that's not exactly how it worked out. The U.S. was having a pretty lackluster showing up until Betty's run. And so, which it contributed, of course, even more to why she was celebrated so much for her win. But there had been all these predicted wins that the Americans had kind of let slip through their fingers, and for various reasons, like the American coaches blamed the weather, which of course, you know, all athletes were training under those kind of gray, rainy skies, and they blamed it on staying on the boat or too much time on the boat, too much ice cream, too much dessert was a big issue because the athletes could eat as much as they wanted on the trip over. So it really ended up being a bit of a mess, really.
Well, your portrayal of it is so good. It's so delightful. I just alone that part I thought was so wonderful, and I was in awe really of your writing because I thought,
thank you.
Wow, she just captured and as you said, sometimes a character, you come across a character who you relate to, and you obviously just jumped into these three characters and have you brought them to life for us. And as I said, I know that, of course, I don't know if you've signed the film deal yet, but I know that somebody's going to offer you one. And it's good. I hope that they live up to the book because it is just so beautifully done.
Thank you. You know, I really... Although these three women are so different, I think readers, I mean, I certainly could find something more than just something to relate to in all of these women because, you know, they really had their work cut out for them. I mean, I really had no idea how many barriers they encountered. I mean, and that's part of the reason in the book I write a lot of newspaper stories, because one of the ways I researched this book was to read all these old newspapers. And, you know, reporters barely did not take these women very seriously at all. And in some cases, like story to story, their names are spelled differently. I mean, all of this, they really didn't. These reporters, the women were an afterthought. But I really wanted to also convey to readers in 2020 and beyond the language that was used to discuss these women. I mean, the buxom gal in Lane 3 looks pretty speedy, but boy, she's a handful. I mean, that's how these reporters would write about them. And I remember in the 2016 Olympics, there was a big discussion in Rio about how reporters were talking about women athletes and how often they'd quickly talk about, you know, if their husband was their coach or something, they'd always, a woman would win and they'd immediately sort of start talking about the husband who was the coach. And I mean, things of course have changed and progress has been made, but I hope readers do see that, you know, there are definitely striking similarities to what women were facing in the 20s and 30s. And still there's a lot of unfinished business of today, right? As far as pay parity and coaching opportunities and sponsorship opportunities. I mean, I hope readers make those connections, because I was really amazed by them as I was working on it. And that's partly why I wrote the newspaper stories, was to use that sort of language and gossipy tone that really permeates so much journalism from that era, and to show readers really what these women were working with as far as public perception. I mean, when women finished the 800 in 1928 in Amsterdam, this was a sort of a trial event to see how it went. And none of my three main runners actually raced in the 800, but which is the half mile. But a group of women did race that, and they were tired, understandably. At the end, it's a half mile. They ran as hard as they could. Several world records were set. One kind of trips over the finish because she's really thrusting her way through it to try to, I think she was neck and neck with another runner. And reporters were absolutely horrified by what they called wretched, tired-looking women. And that event is canceled. I mean, that's the end of the 800 until the 1960s. I mean, distance events were really held off for many years. I mean, the first women's marathon doesn't happen until 1984 in the Olympics. So, you know, these early games really set the tone. These runners were considered kind of blue-collar, working-class girls. Newspapers didn't want to show photos of tired-looking girls. And it's pretty fascinating because, I mean, I still think there's room for discussion in today's media about how women athletes are portrayed. And, you know, there's always sort of a high sex factor often added in to shots of women athletes. And so it's pretty interesting. And I just became more and more obsessed with this topic as I worked on it. There's so much to tease out.
Well, there is, and you did a beautiful job of doing it. I really, as I said, I'm just in awe of your work. I think that it's really just a wonderful book. I hope that everyone will get it. And as I said, you know, the chapter 4, which is really, it's about Louise Stokes. And yeah, you paint there a picture of this wonderful family that she had. And yeah, it just, even as I think about it, it brings tears to my eyes that you wrote it so with so much feeling and so much depth. And it's just one little chapter, but it stands out. And I, as I said, I hope that they use this in writing classes all over, every university. They need, because it's hard to capture that. And when an author can do that, that's saying a lot.
I really do remember writing that chapter. And, of course, I revised it many, many times. But, yeah, I mean, Louise's character is interesting because Helen and Betty, there's quite a bit of information. There's several nonfiction books, there are biographies on them. Louise was the one I really didn't know much about. I really just had sort of a basic outline of this woman's life. But, you know, I think because she was black and a woman, I mean, all of these things sort of worked against her as far as, you know, leaving much documentation behind. And I was able to connect with a sports reporter in New England, Glenn Stout, who had written an article about her for the Boston Globe, I believe, in the late 70s. I found that article, and I then went about tracking him down because it was clear he had talked to some of her family members and he had done a lot of research on her. And so, and he was so lovely. When I got in touch with him, we had a phone call, we had emails, and he ended up sending me this huge file he had built on Louise of all these newspaper stories from the local Malden paper that he had spent. He must have spent hours at the Malden Public Library on microfiche reading about her. And he sent me the whole file and told me, make a copy, use it. This, you know, Louise's story needs to be told. And I'm so grateful to Glenn for that. And it really, well, so it kind of helped me again sort of fill in some of these gaps. But really, I was able to then do a lot of research, of course, about what her life would have been like. And I mean, this woman just, I felt for her. I call her now sort of the Olympian who's been erased from history. I mean, so few people know about her. And you brought her to life.
Exactly.
Thank you.
I'm telling everyone they have to read this book. It's called Fast Girls by Elise Hooper. And Elise has a website, and it's elisehooper.com. And the book is available wherever books are sold. I'm here on YouTube also, so I'm holding up the book. It's got a wonderful cover. It's Fast Girls. Now, will you hold on? I have to break for a commercial, but hold on. And I want you to come back because I want to talk about a book that, another book. Wow, this book is like, it was written for me. You wrote this book for me. I think you wrote this book, The Other Alcott. And I need to talk to you about that, okay?
Hold on. Thank you. Okay.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author? An artist? An inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with the author of my number one pick for summer reading. And it is a wonderful book, and it's called Fast Girls. I would say it's a fast read because it's not really fast. It's a nice big book. It's got lots of stuff in it, but the nice thing is that you can't put it down. So it's fast, I guess, the fact that you just keep reading. And Elise Hooper, I am so happy that you are on Joy on Paper today.
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you.
Because you wrote another book that I think you wrote for me. You didn't know it, but this book was for me because the book is called The Other Alcott. And of course, everybody, I've talked many times on the program about my obsession when I was young with Louise May Alcott and of course with Little Women, which so many of us were. And I always considered myself a mix of my two favorite, characters. of course, I was a tomboy. It was funny. I was a tomboy, and I read and wrote a lot. But I was also a bit of an Amy because I had blonde hair. And like Joe, I had long hair all the way to my tush, but it was blonde. And I also was an artist. I did a lot of drawing. And later on, as an adult, I sort of tinkered in art. And so I was like a combination. And so when this book, I'm reading this book and I'm thinking, oh boy, this is so good. So tell us about how you came about this book and about Louisa May Alcott. And of course, we all know that Jo was based on herself, but not many people know that Amy was based on her sister May.
Sure. Well, this was a book that came, this was my first novel. And this was one that had been sort of percolating inside me for many, many years because I grew up right outside of Concord, Mass., which is where, you know, the Alcott spent most of their lives, although they moved a lot. But they spent a great deal of time, the Alcott girls, in Concord. And their home that they lived in, their orchard house, is now a museum.
Yeah, I visited it.
Little Women.
I had to go there.
Of course. Well, I went to drama camp there as a girl. And so I had visited that house many times. And really, you know, seeing that little desk in Louisa's room that her father had built for her, and that's where she wrote Little Women in 2 months. I mean, that really stuck with me, and I think it really, when I was probably about 9 or 10 when I first saw it, I mean, that is where I first had the realization that books, people write them. They don't just sort of magically appear on bookshelves, and maybe that would be something I would want to do someday. And so really, I give Louisa credit for, I mean, it was Louisa who made me think I could be a writer someday. And, I mean, I was always that kid who was writing books as a kid. You know, I still have some that I made, and I always illustrated them. So kind of like you, I would have considered myself a combination of both Louisa and May. And so when I started writing this book, and it took me several decades to get finally kind of the courage to give it a try, I started off, of course, thinking I'd be writing about Louisa because she is the headliner Alcott sister. But really what happened was I wanted to write about what their lives were like after Little Women came out, because really Little Women changes the Alcott lives so much. I mean, the sort of poverty that's depicted for the March family in Little Women is actually improved upon their real life. In real life, they were so poor. They were really living off, at some point, their mother's small trust fund or inheritance, really, and their neighbor's generosity. And so these women, these girls grew up in an impoverished household. They worked from early ages at various jobs. And so I became fascinated with, because Little Women was such an overnight success for Louisa, and it really changed their lives. I wanted to focus on that period their lives changed. But what I discovered when I started researching it was that Louisa's life, in many ways, while she should have been on the top of the world, best-selling book and all kinds of opportunities coming her way, she was actually experiencing major health difficulties in the sense that she, during the Civil War, had wanted to, of course, Louisa, fight, but she couldn't because she was a woman. So she went and worked as a nurse for several months for the Union Army. Yet she contracted typhoid fever while she was in Washington, D.C., working in a hospital there. And so her time as a nurse is cut short. And and what they did with you when you had typhoid fever during that period was they treated you with mercury. And so Louisa dealt with the effects, essentially, of mercury poisoning for the rest of her life. And that resulted in joint pain, major headaches, insomnia, loss of all kinds of appetite. I mean, she was really... she was largely kind of confined to her house for many years. And yet this is also the period where she finally kind of achieved the success she had always hoped for. And so there's not much of a novel to be written about a woman who sits at her desk for days on weeks and months on end writing. I mean, there's just not really a novel there. And so at that point, I thought about her younger sister, the one who had sketched on her walls as a girl. I mean, the little bedroom in the back of Orchard House had always captivated me as a kid. And I wondered what had happened to May. And so I started my research, and really this book began as kind of a passion project dedicated to the Alcotts. But it really then quickly became a study of women artists in this period. And really what I'm talking about here then is the late 60s, but really the 1870s. And the 1870s are a fascinating period in art history. In the United States, of course, there was not much of an art scene. There were some art schools, not many of them were open to women. And then Europe, of course, was experiencing, really the art world in some ways was turning on its head because the Impressionists were challenging everything that kind of Europe had held dear about art for centuries. And so May kind of develops this sisterhood of women artists in Boston, and then she'll even travel on to Europe and really become very successful in her field at a time when women as painters had very few opportunities. They really had to scratch out every success they could achieve. And so the other Alcott is, to me, so unusual in the sense that there's so many novels about this period with husband or lover or whatever, sister in the title, like the, you know, so-and-so's wife or whatever. But because the women were, you know, we're finding all these interesting women stories, women eclipsed by the more famous men in their lives. And yet the other Alcott, we have May Alcott, whose fascinating life has largely been overshadowed by her more famous older sisters. I mean, it's really the rare case of a woman overshadowing another woman. And so this was such a delight to write because I got to, of course, return to my love of the Alcotts and learn so much more about them, but also really shine a light on women artists and what all that they were trying to do to overcome the many barriers up against them in this period. And so, I mean, this book, it starts in Concord and it takes you to Boston, and then May really travels all over Europe. She spends a lot of time in Rome and Paris and London, and she is doing all kinds of interesting things. She even writes her own book. She really has this life that I couldn't believe I had known so little about.
Well, and it's so fascinating because, as you said, you and I think are this combination of Joe and Amy, and but this artist side, which we, you know, I love art, and it's been always a passion of mine too, to discover that May was this artist and had this, and I think in when we read Little Women, we want something great for Amy. You know, some people mm-hmm. always think, was she selfish? And yeah, but yes, we're all a little bit selfish. And I thought, what the heck? I was a little bit selfish. I one time bought, and this is my only thing that I ever feel really guilty about. I one time bought this purse, and it had a Valentine on it. It was a beautiful, beautiful purse. It was a gift. I bought it as a gift for a birthday, and it was so beautiful. And it was a big deal for us because we lived out in a little town, and we went to the big city. And while I was there, I found this purse, a perfect gift for my best friend. But I wanted it. I just mm-hmm. wanted it. I just couldn't give up that purse. And I'm like, I want this purse, and I wrap it up. I can't keep it because everybody knows I bought it for my best friend. And I don't remember what I gave her, but I gave her something else. And it wasn't until a long time after that I finally, you know, like, took it out from under the bed where I had wrapped it in a towel. And I don't know how my mother didn't find it because my mother was always cleaning under beds. She probably did and didn't say anything.
Right.
And I gave it to the girl. But, you know, I still feel guilty. So I was a little bit like Amy. How was that story sticks with me? But isn't it funny how when you... this, again, that's why I named this paper Joy on... this program Joy on Paper, because you're writing, you're reading. There's so many ways that you can find joy. And right. Often it's just in a character and then developing it. And by the way, May, same letters.
Yeah.
A little bit of anagram there. And, you know, so the whole story about how May felt about Louisa. And, of course, Louisa May Alcott had such an enormous role in so many women's lives. I think
she
you
did.
Could talk to so many women, and they have written about it. And I'm doing research on a book set. Well, I've been writing the book for I don't know how long, set in India in 1875. And did you realize women, educated women, women who were starting to get educated over there, were reading Little Women? It was inspiring in Indian girls in 1875 to start,
amazing.
You know, everybody wanted to be like Joe, you know.
Right.
So it's just an amazing story, and I think you've done a wonderful, wonderful job with this book. And again, after everybody finishes Fast Girls, they should get the other Alcott, and they can find out more about you. And we'll talk for a minute here about your website. It's very nice, and you have questions there for book clubs. You have. Well, you don't have a whole list of tours that you're doing this summer.
No.
But you do have some other events. You're going to do some virtual stuff.
The upside to not doing a real traditional book tour is I've been able to really connect much more easily with people all over the country, you know, places I wouldn't normally travel to. So there are definitely a lot of ways to connect with me now.
And they can go there. So it's Elise Hooper, simple.
And you have.
I think you have a lot of great information there. I noticed that you mentioned Hugo House. I know several people who have been involved with Hugo House over the years. And mm-hmm. I hope that you are safe out there and having a good summer. You're doing research on a World War II book, which sounds fascinating. I have a woman in my building who is 102 years old, and her husband was stationed in the Philippines for many years, and so I've always taken a great interest in the Philippines, and I'm looking forward to that book when it comes out. You will be here on the day of the release. That's what I like.
Oh, wonderful! Thank you. Yes, please.
Okay, so everybody, get this book. And read chapter 4 first if you say, well, I'm not sure I'm going to like this book. Just read chapter 4, and after that you're hooked. You can't. And all the details that are in there. And this is the beauty of a great writer, that you write all the details and it's seamless, and it's like everything is just perfect. And it is.
Wow, thank you.
I'm really, really really thrilled with this book, and I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. It's been a great day for me.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it, Patsy.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Bye. Wow. Wow. Well, I tell you, you know, sometimes you just come across something that is so amazing. And, you know, I love the book. I love the story. And as I said, because I had Sanya Richards Ross on, and I remember I told her, well, there's one scene there where one of the girls is getting ready, and how she talks about how she's, you know, stretching and how she's feeling, how that intense feel that a runner gets when they're preparing to get ready for a run. Elise writes about it beautifully in the book, and Sanya Richards Ross also writes about it in her book, which is called Run With Me. And both of those books, since you don't have any Olympics to watch this year, you might as well read about the Olympics, and it is fun. Well, Sanya Richards Ross' book, it's very touching and very inspirational. She had a wonderful, wonderful story about her childhood, about her father and her entire family who supported her and really worked with her, and of course about her gorgeous husband. What can we say? You know, it's just a wonderful story. So both of these books are books that you should read this summer, and that's as close as you're going to get to the Olympics this year, you know, unless you watch a repeat again I think they are running all the openings of all the different Olympics over the years. I watched two of them already. And I must say, I was impressed with the Australian one. I did not remember this. Somehow I wasn't I must have been busy that year. But they did a pretty good show. Of course, nobody did quite what the Chinese did because, you know, what can we say? They have a massive number of people. And we were looking forward to this year's in Japan. I'm sure the Japanese would have put on a great show. Well, we don't have it, so because you cannot, I don't think you can run, you know, the 400 meter in a mask. Can you run the 400 meter in a mask? I think you drop dead. And, you know, when you think about it, the 100 meter, we're talking like, you know, a few seconds, a few seconds. And they do it. I don't know how they do it. I mean, it would take, I don't think 100 yards. I don't know. It'd take me 10 minutes maybe now. These are wonderful books. And really, you should get them. And I want to just thank everyone for their lovely messages I've been getting. And please keep them coming. You can write to me, Patsy, patsy.radio@gmail.com. Or go to my website, radio-joyonpaper, and you can send me a message through, there's a little form there, you can send me a message, ask me questions. Thank you again, Bill Larson, for being here last week and talking about the importance of not falling for any scams during this time when you're like, you're sort of bored and you tend to click on things. Don't. And also, if you're bored, don't post things online. Stay away from all of these comments and stuff because you might regret it someday. Just stick with your writing. If you're writing, write. And if you're reading, read really a lot of great books, and there are so many. Again, Fast Girls, that's my pick so far this summer. But we'll see. Karen Slaughter will be here next week, and she's a pretty great writer. You know, it's her 20th I think the 20th in her series, and that's going to be fun to be talking to her about that, because I met her here at BoucherCon when we had it here at the Vinoy Hotel, which it was so wonderful. It was so beautiful, and it was an absolute delight to get to meet her and listen to her talking. She's a hoot, I can tell you. There's no BoucherCon this year. Everything's canceled. I don't know. But meanwhile, remember what I always tell you. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't if you don't start writing. And I, again, read Fast Girls because it is going to be a major motion picture. I predict it, and I'm waiting to hear. I'll tell her to come back on and announce when she gets a contract, because this is going to be as good as Hidden Figures. So we have something to look forward to because there's so much awful stuff out there. Again, say something nice to somebody today, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room because he cleaned everything, and everything's spotless and shiny and germ-free in here. So thank you, Ed. Thank you so much. And he's going to salute me, and I'm going to salute him because...
Cleanest hands in radio.
Okay, Ed. Okay, thank you so much. It's a little bit of my throat, but that's what we have to live with today. Anyway, take care, wear your mask, don't get in trouble, and find the joy in the day. Bye-bye now.